Glenn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
So we stand between the audience and lunch, so...
So you better be quick.
You better keep your answers short. Let's start with NCS. I think that is the latest achievement that BCE was able to get done most recently. So talk about what the NCS brings in terms of wireline and wireline scale. I think now you have 70%+ of all Canadian households. So maybe talk about the benefits and then also the costs and revenue synergies that you expect to see going forward.
Sure. Well, the integration, Jeff, so far is going tremendous. It's on plan, exactly what we expect. I mean, you need to step back. This is a core competency at BCE, is integration. We've done so many acquisitions in the last number of years, most recent one being Bell Alliant, where I was previously, and the synergies we're able to mine out of these acquisitions and integration have been great. MTS is another great example. We think we announced originally $50 million of cost opportunity, and we've since revised that and said there's 100. Why? Great opportunity for on backhaul, utilizing. You talked about scale. You put top 50 of our top 100 customers operate in Manitoba, for example. So they would have been, that would have been off net. And now, of course, owning the network, that's on net. MTS subscribers, virtually weeks after we were able to take over the acquisition, all of the MTS wireless subscribers, we were able to move on to our network from our largest competitor. So there's some great synergy opportunities there. So it's gone very well. Scale in our business, whether it be procurement or handset purchasing, as we continue to acquire assets like Bell Alliant and now MTS, the scale gives us great advantage, and I think we've proven that in the ability for us to continue to expand our margins.
Great. Let's touch on wireline. I think that's top of mind with respect to competition that's going on in the marketplace right now, specifically against your cable competitors. It really looks like the pricing environment is quite aggressive out there. Everyone's going to say the other one started it. But I want to get your perspective on the level of competition that's out there, and do you see any indicators that things are actually going to slow down a little bit, or are we into a new phase of hyper competition?
No, Jeff, as I look back, I don't feel that there's ever been a quarter that I felt that we had a soft competitive quarter. It's always been intense. It moves and ebbs and flows from one competitor to the other, maybe from one region to the other. There's been very aggressive competitive offers in the Ontario landscape, but that shouldn't be a surprise. It's where we've announced that we're aggressively rolling out fiber. Our largest competitor has chosen to put long promotional offers in place where we're imminently building fiber. Makes good sense. It's a good strategy. We look out to Quebec, Videotron has always been a formidable competitor. So I think the offers move around. I don't look out to the future and see it any different than the past. It's intensely competitive out there. As we build out networks, the competitors are trying to tie up customers such that when we complete our fiber network, it's harder for them to churn. So that's what's happening. All of that said, we've done extremely well in our fiber footprints where we've rolled out fiber. Our churn is lower. The success rate to take customers and get whole home bundles has been tremendous. So for us, the strategy remains the same, and that's build fiber faster, continue to expand our footprint. We're at about 3.6 million homes. This calendar year will be covered with fiber to the home. Ultimately, 8 to 9 million homes of our 11 million footprint was where we'd like to be. Now, that's going to take us some time, probably 8 to 10 years at a pace of 700,000 homes a year. But 31% complete now. And when you look inside of that footprint, the success we have on winning the whole home has been very, very good. We're at about 812,000 internet subscribers on our fiber to the prem footprint at the end of Q1. And that's growing 40 to 50,000 a quarter. So we'll reach 1 million internet subscribers on fiber to the prem by the end of this calendar year. So as I say, it's going very, very well, and it's a proven technology, it's a proven product.
Right. So let's go into the fiber a little bit on the FTTH build, because one debate that's in the market is one of your peers is building it within their footprint at a pace that's twice as fast as BCE. So talk about the pace. Like, how do you know that how fast you're going is the right pace? What are some of the indicators that you look at?
Well, although our competitor, you're saying, is building twice as fast, they're not building absolutely twice as fast. We'll build 600,000 to 700,000 homes, and nobody is constructing that many homes in the calendar in one calendar year.
Yeah, I was referring more to the
percentage
of homes.
But you have to look at absolute, because it is physical construction, and you can't lose sight of that. It isn't, you know, often we get the question, is it a capital constraint? Mm-hmm. And there's many governors to the pace of which you can move. First of all, you know, we live in Canada. There's only so long of a construction period available to us, and in construction of fiber when you're doing a dig is difficult in the winter months. We're right now embarking upon Toronto. It's about 60% aerial, 40% buried, and it is a difficult build. That means we need to get agreements with hydro companies for connecting to poles. We need to get right-of-ways. We need to work with the municipality on right-of-ways and access to manholes. It takes time. And what you're trying to avoid in a construction program that is so large is you're trying to avoid peaks and valleys that are costly in a construction program. You don't want to train your workforce and then lay your workforce off and then train your workforce. You're trying to find that optimum steady state. You build where you build up your workforce. You have them active year-round, and then as construction moves from one town, one community, one city, you can move your construction force around. So I think right now 600,000 to 700,000 is an optimum pace, but that changes in each and every community. How much is aerial? How much is buried? What's the state of the infrastructure? Toronto's old. We're getting into communities where we have a 40-year-old pole, and we say, well, we can't attach fiber to that. We have to replace the pole. We look at the infrastructure, and we say, oh, good news, this community all has a buried conduit, only to find out that the conduit's crushed or tree roots have grown into the conduit. So now we have to drill and replace conduit. That slows the pace. So I think the pace we're moving at is constrained by many different factors. Always challenging ourselves to move faster. When we moved to Montreal, 90% aerial. I can tell you from my experience in Atlantic Canada, when we built fiber there, we can move at a faster pace when it's 90% aerial, and we will hope to expand that. Maybe 700,000 becomes 800,000.
Right. I definitely want to touch on your experience in Atlantic Canada, but before we leave Ontario, let's talk about the Toronto build a little bit. When do you expect that to be complete? And more importantly, I think the issue is always mass marketing. You got to make sure you have
sure.
a sufficient critical mass in the market before you can mass market. So talk about the timing of the completion, when you think you can mass market in Toronto.
The Toronto build is on plan. We will have the majority of Toronto completed by the end of 17, 650,000 to 700,000 homes of our 1.1 million target. 2018 will complete the remainder of those. So you can't really, Jeff, your point is a very valid one. You can't market a product until you have, you know, a sizable piece of the footprint, or you just aggravate and frustrate customers as they call in to get the product, only to find out they're 12 months away from having the network available in their community. So we will start mass marketing in early 17 when we cross that threshold
early
of
18.
Early 17. When you're at 700,000 to 800,000 in early 17 of our 1.1, then you can start marketing.
You mean next year?
Excuse me, 18.
Yeah.
Early 18. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to get my years right.
Yeah. Okay. So, but in Toronto, you're talking about 1.1. That's the metro.
That's 416.
Correct. So, what about the 905 area?
We haven't made any announcements on where we go next, other than the announcement that you heard just before our last quarter, where we announced an $854 million investment into 514 Montreal.
Okay.
So that's where we'll go next. 905 absolutely is on our radar, but for competitive reasons, I won't bother.
Okay.
Expand on when.
Fair enough. Let's talk about the Atlantic Canada, because you were at Bell Alliant, when this all got started with fiber to the prem, one of the biggest builds in Canada at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about how you see Bell Alliant territory as a as an indicator for how you think you might do in the Bell Canada territory, and more specifically, market share, churn characteristics, and lastly, the cost profile of that network out east, because I think we all think about with a full fiber network, the cost of running it should be a lot lower. So those are the three things, if you can touch on that, that would be
great. And they absolutely are. Seven or eight years ago now that we began the construction program in Atlanta, Canada, and at that time, I guess many seen it as a bit of a leap of faith. Is fiber the right investment? Can you, should you leapfrog fiber to the node? Is fiber to the node an adequate network? Obviously, it's an expensive infrastructure to build out. Fast forward 8 years, and there's zero doubt in my mind it was the right decision. The performance is exceptional. You know, we have communities now that are 7 or 8 years old in Atlantic Canada where we have north of 50% market share on video, and that's starting from nothing, which is incredibly impressive. Not suggesting that every market will move at a pace like that, but it is an exceptional product. We, you know, right now in our footprint, we have 100% of our customers on 150 meg or more that are in our fiber footprint. We have 80% of our customers on 300. We'll be 100%. We'll have 300 megs by this summer as we upgrade the final 20%. We're able to give customers what they want, and that is an exceptional product, great speeds. I believe the best video service in the industry today is available. So that's on the customer side, on the growth and market share side. But the other benefit that really is exciting is what fiber does for cost structure. And now we're starting to experience that. When we roll fiber out and we complete a community like we have in Atlantic Canada, like we're doing here in Toronto, we see, for example, 40% less truck rolls on a fiber to the prem network than on a fiber to the node network, let alone on an old copper network. We see 50% less preventive maintenance requirement. And you have to think about what the infrastructure is. A fiber to the node network is fiber out to a node, and there's many of those nodes that surround your neighborhood. Certainly, Jeff, you understand that infrastructure. That means electronics in the field. If you put electronics in the field, it's inevitable you will have troubles. From the node to the home is copper. It might be 20 years old, might be 40 years old, and copper doesn't behave well in moisture, in the humidity. So inevitably, you have high trouble rates. It's old. It's old plant. It's old infrastructure. Fast forward to the network we have today, it's removal of all electronics in the field. It's fiber optic from our CO directly into your home. Unless a truck pulls down the drop or there's a dig that a backhoe cuts up the fiber, it just works. It requires very little maintenance. That creates a higher customer loyalty. Obviously, lower customer churn, lower cost structure. So, you know, I think we're just on the infancy of what we are going to see as the cost structure of a telco of tomorrow. When we get to that 8 to 9 million of our homes completed with fiber, and I think about the step change to cost structure and the ability for us.
When did you guys start to see that step function on network costs in Atlantic Canada?
Well, you start to see it immediately. I mean, day one, you're starting to see preventive maintenance or repair calls lower. When you have an aging copper network and you look forward to a weather forecast that rains, our engineers could have parked the trucks in the communities where we know we're getting calls that there's a buzz on the line, there's trouble on the line, because it's old, aging plant. Soon as you replace fiber, that goes away. So we see the benefits in the contact center for reduced calls. We see the benefits of the truck rolls immediately. The next step function, and it's certainly, I don't want to overstate it, it's a ways out, is when can you literally shut down and migrate from your legacy networks? We're starting to see some of that occur with Verizon down in the U.S. I don't want to overstate it because forced migration is dangerous because it forces a customer to make a decision. There's probably a point when 80% of a community, of a neighborhood is on your new fiber network that you say, look, let's force migrate the last 20%. when you do that, I think we're in for some interesting cost experiences into the future.
Because then you can start shut down the central office and real estate costs. And
all your nodes, pull that out. The copper's not.
Yeah, you're talking about 80% penetration of that market. Like you have 80% of those subscribers.
80% of your customers are residing on your network, leaving 20% of your customers. Because what happens, Jeff, is now you have to force that 20% into a buying decision.
Right.
So you're going to wake up, for all intents and purposes, sleepy customers who are existing on your network. They're happy. They haven't done anything. They haven't chosen to make a move. And now you're going to contact them and say, we're moving you off our existing platform onto a new platform. Well, the first thing a customer is going to say is, well, if I have to make a move, maybe I should ask myself what's out there.
But that's 80% market share.
Of our customers,
right.
Not of the market.
Okay.
So if you assume.
Yeah. Got it. Let's switch gears over to wireless, because I definitely want to talk about that. And I'll ask the same questions I asked TELUS early this morning. I mean, we're seeing good fundamentals in the wireless business in terms of ads, ARPU, churn. What's your assessment of what's going on in the marketplace? One, for the overall market. Number two, the balance of market share between the incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
That has all been pretty stable as well the last couple of quarters. What's your assessment?
Well, it's been a pretty incredible run for us at BC with our wireless business the last number of years. Very, very healthy growth across, you know, all of our metrics. I often look at probably the most important metric to me is that we get a disproportionate share of the EBITDA growth of the incumbents, and that continued into first quarter. Look, first quarter was a great quarter, 4.2% ARPU growth, 7.5% EBITDA growth for ourselves, but it was a great quarter for all of the incumbents. All the big three all did very, very well, and frankly, I think that's a healthy place for the industry to be. You know, you always get nervous when a competitor is not performing as well as they have historically, that can lead to irrational behavior, irrational pricing. To see how all three of the big three performed in Q1, I think that's healthy news for the industry. That leads to what I think is more rational pricing, shorter duration promotion stints. We all know that in this industry, we tend to all get active at the end of a quarter. We all love our promotional activity on Black Friday and Boxing Day. Those are expensive days for us, but we all do it. But when everybody's performing like this, I think they tend to be shorter in duration. They tend to be more rational. Why are the net adds so healthy? I think immigration plays a role in that, particularly in Toronto. I think we're seeing a lot of net adds, a lot of new immigrants coming into our region. You know, another phenomenon we're seeing here in Canada is multiple devices now is becoming real, where people have a home phone, or excuse me, a cell phone for personal use and a cell phone for business use. So we're starting to see that play a role. Tablet growth continues, albeit fairly small, but growth is still there. And another factor, I think, is customers are getting younger and younger. At one time, I think we entertained getting our children cell phones when they were maybe 14 or 15, and now they're all walking around with cell phones at 8 or 9. So if we could just encourage that to be 3 or 4, I think that would be very healthy for the industry.
Well, 2-year-olds are using tablets. So.
Well, excellent. You just need to put a SIM card in that tablet. So.
What could upset that balance, I guess, is really, I think, what investors think about.
Well, I mentioned the area that I often concern myself with is when one competitor is suffering and going through long, you know, durations of less than stellar performance.
So that doesn't sound like it could happen.
No, and then you think about your fourth player. Naturally, we have regional fourth players, and, you know, let's speak about Quebec first. That's interesting because Videotron now, I would say, is an incumbent with 800,000 to 900,000 wireless subscribers now. They're starting to understand what life as incumbency feels like, which is it's hard to grow market share by using price and being aggressive because you risk repricing your underlying base. You start to see the cycle of churn pick up. So I believe that we'll see rational and reasonable behavior in that marketplace. How is how is Freedom going to behave? I guess that's a risk that we all are watching. What am I comforted by? The fact that they have a significant capital build in front of them, building out their LTE network, they have to pay for that. So being aggressive on price, look, at BCE, at $40 to $42 ARPU, we break even at our scale. So you can't live off of $38 ARPU into perpetuity. It has to grow. You have to have ARPU that's approaching, you know, well into the 40s, particularly if you have the capital build that they have in front of them. They're building an LTE network today, I believe on AWS 3, which many handsets are not compatible with now, including the iPhone. We're going to be completing our LTE Advanced network to 87% of our customers this year. So as they build this state-of-the-art network, they're already going to have network inferiority by the end of this calendar year, which is going to require further investment, further spectrum. As you know, we're doing tri-band aggregation, carrier aggregation now, quad-band, PCS, AWS, 700, 2500, which is giving just ridiculous speeds. All of that requires constant investment to stay in the game. And I believe that that's happening, it's going to be difficult for them to play a pricing game. And in the event that they do, all three of us have a flanker brand, and that we use that very wisely against those aggressive price points when they enter the market.
Okay. We've got a couple of minutes left, so I want to definitely touch on capital allocation. I guess two areas. One, the dividend and the dividend strategy, growth strategy that you guys have. As we look out the next 12, 18, 24 months. And then the second aspect is M&A. Beyond the Canadian borders, are there any opportunities out there, or even within the Canadian borders, are you guys looking at anything that might be interesting? So two areas.
Well, I'll start with M&A first. We've got a lot on our plate right now with the integration of MTS. That's our focus. We're not actively looking to move beyond our borders. There's a lot to be done here. I spoke about a massive construction program to bring fiber to the level we need it to be ultimately in our business. I spoke about the investments we're making and continuing network leadership in wireless, integrating MTS. So for us, I don't think there's a lot left in the Canadian landscape to chase. We're not looking outside of our borders right now. When opportunities come up for M&A that fit our strategic imperatives, well, naturally we'll be there. That's what's served us so well. We don't go outside of our core. We stick to our knitting, and I think that's what you can expect of BC go forward. On capital allocation, look, we know who our investors and shareholders are. They look to us for yield play. The last 9 years, we've been able to consistently grow that dividend, responsibly grow that dividend, and I don't think in the next 12 to 18 months you can expect anything different from us. That's our strategy. It's one of balance. It's make that necessary investment in the infrastructure to ensure that we have the revenue streams of the future. So that 17 to 18% capital intensity, I think you'll see continue. Maintaining a decent and fair payout ratio, the 65 to 75% that we're planning on in that horizon. Said differently, that leaves us with 25% cash to make a decision strategically with every year. Historically, we've had to use a big portion of that cash for pension top-ups and voluntary contributions to our pension plan to maintain that solvency deficit ratio around 90%. Well, good news is we're at about 95 now. I'd like to think that interest rates aren't going to go lower, so those contributions are for the most part behind us. M&A, I have already mentioned, I don't think there's a great deal of deals in front of us to use up that cash flow on. So then, can you pay down some debt and ultimately over the next couple, 3 years, get your leverage down closer to our stated objective of 2.25? I think that would be wise. That's what over the next 3 years I'd like to do. And then using that cash flow to continue to fuel dividend growth. And I think that's our balance. I think of it as the three-legged stool. A responsible payout level, respect your investment-grade credit rating, invest in the business. through capital, and I think that's what we're doing.
Great. I think that's a great place to leave it and let everyone head off to lunch.
Great.
Thank you, Glenn, for being here.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.